are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Children International is working to end child poverty around the world by giving kids access to a safe place, a team, and a path out of poverty by focusing on health, education, empowerment, and employment. Together with people like you, we're more than a nonprofit. We're a powerful force for change. Learn more at children.org.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, November 30th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, President-elector Mr. Donald Trump and the Republican Party coming for your Medicare and your Medicaid and your health insurance more broadly. Does liberalism have the ability to deal with a Donald Trump? FBI may have been investigating Trump before the election. What are you going to do? Effort grows to protect faithless electors and attack the institution of the Electoral College. In North Carolina, McCrory almost done. Actually going to his allies are suing the state to continue counting I don't know what, and then not allowing the state to defend themselves from that lawsuit. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, if you've got $1 million, have I got a great luncheon for you to attend before the inauguration. Trump's a carrier, a shell game. And more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do, I mean, here's, it is becoming clearer and clearer. I mean, look, there's a lot of different fires that are going to have to be put out over the course of the next 4 years. The first big fight, and perhaps maybe the one that we are most or best situated to, I don't know, win, or is really the right word, but win, I guess it is. And that is basically to keep Medicare, maybe Medicaid. I think the Affordable Care Act, I think it's there's going to be a real problem maintaining that. Broadly speaking, let me just tell you what I think is, and we're going to spend some time on this. We're going to talk about it today. We're going to talk about it tomorrow, because if this is going to be a massive fight. I don't know if people remember the 2005 fight against Bush to stop the privatization of Social Security. There was massive coordination amongst the center-left supporters of Social Security. I think Josh Marshall really made his mark at that time, where they started to have people comment on what their local congressman, where their local congressman was. They were creating a lot of pressure on Congress. There's less opportunity to do that with Congress this time, or the House anyways. More opportunity to do it with the Senate. And we'll get into that. But you people need to be armed with the reality of what they're proposing. Because I think this goes without saying, but the Republican Party simply does not believe that government should be in a position to enable people to get health insurance. They don't believe that government should provide health insurance. They don't believe that government should provide health care. They don't believe that government should even enable one's ability to do so. Now, can they completely strip it away right now politically? They probably think not, and I think that's probably true. So what they have to do is strip away as much as possible, but make it sound like they're not doing that. I was at the 928, 912, or whatever it was, whatever that crazy Glenn Beck thing that he had going for a while during his crazy period. And I interviewed probably about 50 or 60 people. I went down there with a camera and a microphone. I think it was actually film guy Matthew was shooting it. And I got we have the footage somewhere. It's on our channel somewhere, like some of it anyways, where, you know, there was just the most amazing amount of insanity that you could imagine. However, I asked every single person, should we cut Social Security? Should we cut Medicare? And almost to a person, I think there was one or two who said, absolutely. That was when this country went socialist in 1935 or whatever it was, 39. But just about the other 45 out of 50, 48 out of 50 said, oh, no, we should keep that because, you know, people have paid into it or, you know, it already exists for whatever that, I don't know. I don't know what the theory was. Medicare, Social Security for that matter, are so resilient and so durable because they're universal. And this means that you will be able to make the argument to people about Medicare who are traditional Republican voters. Older people are more aware of what it costs for health insurance and what health care costs, just because statistically they get sicker more often or they know more people who are sick. And here is the dilemma, and here is the reason why, and the Democrats failed to sell the Affordable Care Act, and in many respects. And there were also major problems with it. It doesn't go nearly far enough. It's not, it didn't really make things affordable. It was also part of the branding problem.
Brand proposition.
It did add 20 million people to the rolls of health insurance. But here is the dilemma you have from a political standpoint on health insurance. 80% of the costs of health care are borne by 20% of the people. So in other words, most people, until they get older, but just the vast majority of people, don't realize how bad their insurance is in terms of providing health insurance. They only judge it based upon how much it's costing them each month, which is not an unfair measure. But if you don't hit if you don't have a catastrophic situation and hit your lifetime cap within 8 months of being diagnosed with cancer or getting treatment, you don't understand the value of your health insurance. If you don't take expensive drugs on a consistent basis, you don't understand the value of your health insurance in mitigating those expenses. If you don't have a pre-existing condition, lose your health insurance because you switched jobs or you just didn't have the cash, you needed 3 months off, whatever it was, tried to get health insurance again, it was before the Affordable Care Act, and couldn't get it because you had a pre-existing condition. You're just not aware of these things. If you don't have children, you're just not aware of it, of the costs associated with it. So it makes it a very hard sell to people In addition, you can't show them the parallel universe where there are rate increases that are slightly more or significantly more than you have in the Affordable Care Act exchanges. Okay, I'm not being an apologist for this legislation. I'm just explaining the political dilemma around it. So, with the Affordable Care Act, you have three essential elements to this. One is the Medicaid expansion, which added somewhere around 9 million people to the insurance rolls. Obviously, in many Republican states, it was never expanded, and it will never be. But and the next element is a series of regulations as to saying what health insurance must consist of to be considered health insurance. Right? Like, you can't sell a product that is water and with a little bit of like white coloring food and say, this is milk. You can't say it's cow's milk because we have regulations in this country.
Well,
same thing with insurance. Now, your health insurance is not health insurance if it can cut you off if you have to use it too much. If you get hit by a bus and you're in the hospital for 9 months, they can't say, well, you've reached your lifetime caps. Goodbye. It's not health insurance unless it provides certain benefits. Some elements of no copays on certain required, health things like a colonoscopy or providing birth control. Health insurance, not health insurance if it can be denied to you for pre-existing conditions, as we've talked about. And in this country, you can ride on your parents' health insurance until you're age 26. So that's the other sort of that's two of the three components. The third component are these exchanges, which are basically a way of organizing the individual insurance market that, I don't know, 15 million Americans maybe participate in. And it's basically saying if you're one of those people, you can go onto this exchange, get insurance, and if you are within 140% of poverty, if you're between 133% of poverty, because Medicaid supposedly now expanded there and those places where it expanded it, between 133% of the poverty line or up to 400%, you will get a sliding scale subsidy to subsidize that insurance. Is it still really expensive? For some people, yes. For other people, not as much. Depends on where you are, depends on how old you are, and whatnot. Understand that the idea behind the exchanges here was to smooth out the risk pool. And the risk pool is, if I have 100 people, how likely are X number of them to get sick this year? And that's how I determine how much I'm going to pay. One of the things the Affordable Care Act set up was risk pool subsidies for the insurance companies because they had no idea who would be in their risk pool now that new people would be entering the market for the first time because they were able to afford it. And so there was subsidies available for insurance companies to cover them if they underestimated how many people would go in there. Now, that was also curtailed significantly by the Republicans after the fact. Marco Rubio was actually a big part of that. And so a lot of these insurance companies left the markets. They were also left the market because they weren't required to sell only their products in those exchanges. And they started to realize, like, well, wait a second. Here's a crappy risk pool in these exchanges where for every 100 people, I'm just making up a number, 30 of them are going to get sick. But in the general population, only 20 are going to get sick. So let's sell to the general population because that's how we make money. We only have to pay out 20 claims. We got 100 people paying in as opposed to being in a situation where there's 30 claims and we've got 100 people in. So that's what started to happen with the Affordable Care Act. Fixing that is off the table now, so we don't even need to discuss it. So I'm telling you that about the Affordable Care Act because I want to explain how they're going to tear it apart and what they're going to try and replace it with and what the sort of the big lie about it's going to be. But then we're also going to talk about the big lie that you're going to hear when it comes to Medicare. Medicare, as you know, is health insurance program for, what is it now, 50 million Americans approximately, over the age of 65. People love their Medicare. For people who want more insurance, you can also get supplemental insurance as a Medicare. But I don't know anybody who criticizes Medicare. I've just never come across somebody. I'm sure there's some people. But broadly speaking, Medicaid is for people who are low income. It is a much tougher program, much harder to find doctors who will take Medicaid and whatnot. Medicare, it's not too hard to find doctors who will take it because everybody's in it and they don't have much of a choice. They're not going to be in business, even though Medicare pays doctors 20% less than private insurance. And why does Medicare pay it? Because Medicare has the ability to buy volume in terms of care. They're the only game in town. And they also have the ability to know how much things cost because they can compare prices across the board. Medicaid is for low-income people. However, many elderly end up on Medicaid because you live your life from 65, 75, let's say 85, maybe 90. I don't know when this happens. It happens for different people. But let's say you need to go into a nursing home. Medicare does not pay for that. Medicaid will pay for it if you are basically out of resources. So many people spend down and have to spend down what they have, and then Medicaid takes care of the nursing home. So this affects seniors as well, Medicaid. All right, so let's start with Medicare. What Paul Ryan wants to do and what Tom Price wants to do, and they differ only in the details, but the broad strokes are this. They want to privatize Medicare. They want to give you a tax credit and a fee in which you will go out into the private market, which we know is more expensive than Medicare to administer. Of course, there's no profits in Medicare, right? I mean, you got to pay for profits with Medicare, 3 cents on the dollar. Private insurance, somewhere around 18 cents on the dollar. They're going to give you vouchers in the form of tax credits or whatnot. And you're going to go buy the private insurance. The growth of those vouchers is going to be static, stagnant. The cost of your insurance is going to go up over time. So you're going to get less and less value from the government to get health insurance. That's what we mean when we say vouchers are privatizing. The big lie that they will tell you is that this only affects people under the age of 55. Now, A, if you're under the age of 55, then you should be crapping your pants because by the time you get to be 65 or 70, your ability to get health insurance is going to be greatly diminished because even if they start at a one-to-one cost ratio with tax subsidies to buying private insurance, by the time you get 15 years later, at the rate insurance increases now, imagine how it's going to increase when there isn't Medicare holding down, which Medicare is the anchor. Medicare is the lead in the balloon that floats up. That is the inflationary pressures of health insurance. Doesn't stop it all the way, but it slows it. You're going to see what happened when they started to cut public universities funding. and charging students more money on tuition than the private university said, like, oh, well, this is inflationary pressure. The guys who used to give it away for free or virtually nothing are now charging five times that. We gotta raise our prices. We can. So by the time, if you're 55, by the time you're getting Medicare or whatever, the vouchers, and frankly, it's not Medicare. Again, I mean, I can take a milk container and I pour a bunch of water in it and I hand it to you and I tell you, it's milk. I call it milk. It's not milk. Medicare is a thing. And what it is it's social insurance, not a subsidy for private insurance. That's a different thing, but they're going to call it Medicare. The other thing that the other problem with their saying, and you got to ask yourself, like, well, it's such a great idea. Why would they want to punt it for 10 years? Right? Because, I mean, how many months would it take a 65-year-old to realize, oh my God, this is much better than Medicare? But the other problem is that, remember now, insurance works. Insurance is really just a function of the pool, the risk pool. So at one point, 55-year-olds go into Medicare. When those people turn 70, there's been no one entering in the risk pool for those 5 years. And the healthiest people in Medicare are the 65 to 70-year-olds, broadly speaking. It's obvious. They're the youngest. You're going to need those people in there to spread the risk. You're going to need those people in there to keep prices down, because the way that Medicare keeps prices down is that their patients, the volume of patients they have, give them the negotiating power. So it will screw it up for those 55-year-olds. And those 65-year-olds, and those 70-year-olds, in addition to screwing all of us who are younger than that. If you're 65 today, and they implement this tomorrow, you're going to be screwed in your early 70s. Doctors, why would they continue to take Medicare? They know it's coming. We don't have to in the future. I'm going to reorient my business. So that's basically the broad strokes of the attack on Medicare. Now, I know Donald Trump said he wasn't going to attack Medicare. Bah, 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 bah. Yeah, if you bought that during the election, then I've got a different show for you to listen to.
He is a pretty honest guy. It's not like he even said during the election in a meeting with Paul Ryan specifically, I know that those things need to be cut. That never happened.
Right. It was reported, but you can't believe what you read.
The lying press.
Fake news.
Yes.
I also have a theory that Donald Trump is really basically not involved in the vast majority of this. I honestly like
No, he's clearly only interested in personal enrichment. Those are the two tracks.
Let me take a break from this, because we'll get to the Affordable Care Act in a second. But here's my theory about what's going on with Donald Trump right now. I mean, occasionally goes out for dinner. I get to go out to dinner and humiliate Mitt. And if he kisses up to me, he did it once before and I gave him the endorsement. Let's see if he does it again.
You want to know how it goes, Sam? Here's how it goes. Donald Trump ritualistically humiliates rivals and enriches his business interests all day. And the rest of us loot and pillage and rape the country. But we are terrified of the Jill Stein groundswell that is surely coming for us in 2020. We know that if we push it too far, that Susan Sarandon and other noble comrades will be on the streets pushing us out of power. Sorry, I'm laughing. Basically, you're completely effed, cucks.
So, all right. So here is my theory about what Donald Trump is doing. Here is Donald Trump tweeting at 6:55 in the morning on November 29th. Nobody should be allowed to burn the American flag. If they do, there must be consequences, perhaps a loss of citizenship or 1 year in jail. Now, let's put away the notion of a loss of citizenship. Like, I don't even know.
Yoink.
Like, what? Like, you get sent out. People, they send you out on a raft with just like a couple of, like, I don't know, elk pelts.
Look, if you're a good guy, you get sent to Belize. You're a bad guy, you get sent to Syria.
You get sent out to. But I mean, just contemplate this. What is going on? What is going on? Donald Trump must have been. I wonder if he was up all night reading some type of treaties. Contemplating the questions of patriotism or nationality, or perhaps they were talking to, they were doing threat assessments.
It was a meditation on shared identity and patriotism, but freedom.
I've got my 6 a.m. threat assessment meeting, and I've got a couple of people in there, and I talked to some of these brave Americans, and who said, I do this for the flag, President Trump. And then as soon as I got out of there, I was just like, gosh darn it, I love this country so much. I got a tweet about, oh, no, that's not what it was. He was watching TV. This was on Fox News at, what was it, 6:35 in the morning or something. 6:25. Here it is.
A Massachusetts college that we've been talking about for about a week now, blanketed in red, white, and blue, all in response to a campus-wide ban on the American flag. The college is called Hampshire College. It's in Massachusetts. They took down the flag after one flag was set on fire, one was stolen in the wake of the president-elect Trump's win. Now veterans are fighting back with their own protests, sparked by a lawmaker's letter demanding that they fly that flag again. And that lawmaker joins us now. His name is John Velas. He is a Massachusetts state representative for the past 2.5 years.
There you go. And they talk about, where they talk about someone burned the flag on that, apparently.
I mean, this Hampshire is what, College is ISIS. I see it.
This is what Donald Trump is doing. He's sitting in the corner. Like, if someone, like, you imagine, like, one of those pictures, you know, like, when you see, like, those pictures of, like, of the transition teams, or when they're in the national briefing room or whatnot. And I just imagine, like, all the adults sitting around, like, those couches in the West Wing, and Donald's in the corner with, like, some type of VR thing, just going, like, hey. You know,
like the Bin Laden photo, the Bin Laden situation photo. Trump's on the side, like watching Fox and Friends.
These new snap goggles are amazing. I can literally screen out all human contact.
Yeah, I mean,
I was thinking to myself, is Tiffany, have I been too hard on her? Maybe she's a 7.5.
This shouldn't be a surprise. We've seen the reports that he's not getting the presidential daily briefings, that Pence is taking them. And this shouldn't be a surprise either. John Kasich told us that Usay or Kude, I'm not sure which one, came to him and said, you can have the domestic and the foreign policy portfolio. Dad just wants to be president.
Nailed it.
And look, and I think that's probably what's going on. So understand that when we're talking about the destruction of Medicare, when we're talking about the destruction of Medicaid, when we're talking about the destruction of the Affordable Care Act, when we're talking about assault on Social Security, when we're talking about assault on SCHIP, health insurance for children, food stamps, we're talking about getting rid of the SEC or basically making it irrelevant, using the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as a weaponized tool to attack industries that Trump doesn't like. On and on and on. When we're talking about that, Donald Trump is vaguely relevant in this.
I literally didn't understand anything you said until the last part about using government to punish my enemies. That's amazing.
Well, and I should just add, when it comes to using government to enrich himself.
I'm listening.
Exactly.
Can I get in on this insurance market thing that we're going to do? How about Trump vouchers and people have to buy them? Why don't we get back into the state game?
I mean, all of this that we're talking about, too, is just like, this is all, frankly, this is the best case scenario.
Guys, what about the Green Party, though? I feel like they're going to take me out in 2020 if we're not careful.
This is all the best case scenario I'm talking about.
why haven't the crew of the Majority Report been killed yet? I feel like I asked for that like a month ago.
The worst case scenario, the worst case scenario is that, and you can see Trump, you know, trying to lay the groundwork with this terrorist thing. I mean, the worst case scenario, I should say, that's the best case scenario. Then there's the sort of like middle ground scenario, which I think is also probably sadly lumped in with the best case scenario, which deals with the attacks on immigrants, the destruction of families, DACA, DAPA, all gone. Children who have lived here for 20 years, brought here as children, deported. I don't know if they'll be able to get a national stop and frisk. I mean, there are people who are much more vulnerable than someone like myself. Or other commentators, for that matter. And that's not to mention like the impact on like sort of the cultural impact. You know, we're just talking policy here. I mean, you can see the cultural impact all around us. How many videos have you seen come out now where some guy in a car is yelling at a someone else who's got the video camera because that person holding the video camera is either brown or black or whatnot? This is... You know, this is the thing, and I've been reading about this authoritarian stuff, and we're still going to work on getting Bob Altmaier on. I'm not sure that's going to happen in any time soon, but you can go to authoritarians.org and read his book. And I'm going to talk to him about maybe the audio version, but it's unleashing something that is a personality trait as much as anything else. And this guy has done clinical research for 40 years documenting the existence of 20 to 25% of people in North America who have this personality trait that is activated by an authoritarian leader. Man, a guy who says, I can do this. I can take care of it. And it comes out, they also tend to be misogynist, racist, xenophobic, although there are instances where they won't behave that way if they don't feel they have the authority's permission. Like, the authority's permission is what activates these people. Now, I don't know if this lady is just simply off her meds, and I don't say that casually. I think it's possible. But it's also indicative of a lot of stuff that we've seen. She's at a, what is this? What is the place of John's or something?
Michael's.
A Michael's, like a craft place. And apparently, they didn't have a bag big enough for what she wanted to purchase. And so the checkout person said, well, we do sell bags for a dollar that would be big enough for that. And apparently, this set her off. But this is, and there's another woman who's got a kid who apparently was like, I got to videotape this.
Pause it.
So here she is in this argument with a black woman who apparently is working at the counter, convinced that she's been discriminated against because of the bag, and has to announce that she voted for Trump. Does this remind you of anything? Like maybe that douchebag on the plane that we played yesterday? I voted for Trump. How about it? And look who won. Look who won. There's a certain defensiveness.
Because they didn't really win.
Well, that and the fact that they realized like, oh, I didn't know that the black people would still be around today. I thought he won.
What are you doing here?
So here she is. She's going to go on.
What you think you're videoing, lady.
That's ridiculous. You're videoing.
I don't know what you think you're videoing. I was just discriminated against by two black women. Yes, I was. And you being a white woman, you literally thinking that that's okay. You standing there with your baby thinking that's okay. I don't know what you're videoing. But your child is stealing.
She's not.
Oh, yeah, I don't think you paid for that.
Ridiculous.
And I can video you too, lady. Please and I can video you too. Please. Why don't you go home to your husband who's cheating on you? Why don't you go home because you're... Come, I'll just videotape your file.
Okay. Yeah, there you have it. Harassing minimum wage workers. Non-white minimum wage workers has to be peak Trump, right? I mean, that's like...
I don't see how it gets any more textbook than that. I mean, is she just running a clinic?
Maybe she should replace Kellyanne.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other element that we're going to get with Trumpism, right? These are still best case scenarios. Best case scenario is that we get right wing agenda, policies, destruction of our social safety net, drawing back literally 100 years of rights that have been established. Rights as citizens, rights as to get health care, voting rights. Literally, that's all best case scenario. Worst case scenario is that we have some type of actual attack from ISIS. Not some kid who gets self-radicalized and supposedly commits a terrorist attack, but rather one that is clearly like a Paris attack. Is that possible here? Well, the last time we had a Republican president, they were able to do something like this.
Stop bothering me with the briefings. I'm trying to watch TV.
But the worst case scenario is what happens then, because they're lining up now. Kris Kobach et al. Maybe their head of Department of Homeland Security. Who knows who that guy is going to be? But Flynn and Bannon, even Priebus is coming out and saying, well, there is a problem with Islam. I mean, parts of it. So the worst case scenario is that we move in to the full-on fascistic kleptocracy. And that's not off the table. But right now, we're going to stick with just sort of, today anyways, dealing with how you can push back against the Medicare attacks and the Affordable Care Act attacks, and I got more to say that.
I just wanted to say that that incident in Michaels reminds me of, in a way, of something that's been going on Facebook, and my Facebook is limited. There's a limited number of people, and it is very, very liberal. And
you're saying you don't have many friends on Facebook.
I know everybody in person that is my friend on Facebook, which I think is maybe different for a millennial, whatever. People a little bit younger than me. But the thing is that I'm going to say is that I have seen various people post that they voted for Trump. So they're choosing to post that they vote for Trump. And they're complaining that they've gotten pushback in real life, and they're complaining about the treatment that they've received because of being a Trump voter, which, unless you told people, there wouldn't be any pushback because no one knows who voted for who. I mean, anyone can make assumptions, but you can just walk away. But then they post it on Facebook. Then if anyone disagrees with them, even in a very civil way, they freak out.
Well, totally, yeah, this is like the hypothetical situation that I expressed about emails before I went to Thanksgiving. The comparison of me responding to an email that they're not even a part of, it just so happened that they saw it by hook or crook, hypothetically speaking. The comparison of me responding with an email to people being pulled out of their bed by a government at 3 a.m. in the morning and sent to a gulag. Those two have equal weights in their mind.
Right.
You're pretty not really interested in free exchange of ideas then. I see.
It's insane.
The aggrievement of the Trump voter
Yes.
is, that is, I mean, honestly, if you take away the aggrievement,
It's just they have just to get it out.
Of clothes.
You know, it reminds me of like a kid that does something wrong and they don't quite understand what they've done wrong, and you tell them they've done wrong and they react in anger toward you. Does that ever happen?
Does that ever happen? Well, in my house, like all the time, I would say. Basically from the moment I get home until the moment I leave, that happens.
Sam's not doing a good job.
So just to wrap up what I, because it's confusing me on Facebook, and I've kind of jumped ship for a little while, which I think a lot of people have. But these posts, you know, whenever I've seen them, people will post this and that toward these people, and then the people are like, I'm being cyber bullied and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I have a right to this and that. And you know, I shouldn't get involved, but, you know, like Sam, I'm like, why did you post this? What did you think was going to happen? And this isn't what cyberbullying is.
A bunch of fakes are cyberbullying me because I support Trump.
I know, there's like 11 comments.
A bunch of people
like,
who I would like to
about?
See just removed from the country, maybe thrown into a gulag, cannot respect that I exercise my
it's
right to vote for Donald Trump.
It's not America if everyone doesn't agree with me.
I'm like, I respect your right to vote for whoever you want. I think you're completely wrong, but I don't get. But
cyberbullying.
But you posted
it. Cyberbullying.
They don't know why they posted it.
Yeah,
they have no idea.
Oh, they. I think they do because they want people to know that they won. Kind of.
They're anxious about. Yeah, they don't know the gravity of what they're doing. Sure. Yeah. I think that's why.
I want to have a free exchange of ideas where I talk about stripping your rights away as a human being, and you just can't handle it. So instead, you disrespect a dehumanizing
person. Also, you know they're not stupid people, which is why I had to jump ship, because I'm like, oh, I can't understand it. I don't want
to
deal with it.
All right, we're going to get to the Affordable Care Act tomorrow. David Dayan will be on the program. He's going to catch us up on some of this. He's on the sort of transition beat, as it were.
Who's David Dayan?
But look, I just, you know, this is something we're going to hammer over and over again. Because there's really no coming back from this. I mean, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I don't, I'm too mad about it still. I got an email from someone. A listener.
About to get real here.
I enjoy listening to your show and respect your opinion. I enjoy the mixture of political talk with humorous banter. Oh, in that case, let me just do this.
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
But the subject line of this email is progressives. What's our plan now? And I opened it up because, you know, this is a valid question. It's also a question that I am like actively asking myself, and anybody who has a suggestion to this effect, but it was literally just a question. And so after saying, I enjoy listening to your show and respect your opinion. I enjoy the mixture of political talk with humorous banter. So why I didn't vote for Clinton? I urged all my friends to vote their conscience. I have several religious friends that I knew would struggle voting for a man like Trump, but I would be a hypocrite if I voted for Hillary Clinton. Why? ? Now, at this point, I stopped reading. I stopped reading and immediately, like, got up from the computer and I was like, I can't, this has got to be a joke. And then I started to write back without reading anymore because I was, like, getting violently ill.
You got to stop sending these fake emails, Matt. He's going to have an aneurysm.
Honestly. Now, is it worth it for me even to do the bullet points?
Just do it. Just do it. You've already
let us
down.
Because it's an undisputed fact that the DNC colluded with Clinton to have her win the nomination. Well, it's
disputed.
A completely disputed fact, but even if I stipulate that, the DNC was in favor. They didn't make her win it, but they did want her to. The hacked emails prove this out. With DWS, the head of the DNC, there was only one person the Democrats would nominate. The voters didn't matter. But in fact, they did, because they voted more for Clinton. All right? I mean, that's just the reality. But I don't know why I'm arguing these points. She took money from lobbyists. Money corrupts.
You can say that again.
She's been wrong about so much and late to change. She was late on gay marriage, late on TPP, single payer in the Iraq war.
Yeah, late at change. Crooked Hillary.
She reached out to moderate Republicans instead of progressives. I agree. I criticized her for that. She could have chosen a different VP. She's a war hawk.
Goddamn right.
She's a war hawk. And then he goes on to why I didn't vote for Trump.
All we are saying is give peace a chance.
Okay, Trump won. Now what? What's the plan? Well, I was hoping the DNC would learn from their mistakes. That's not a plan. That's a hope. I don't even know what that means. The Democratic National Committee would learn from their mistakes? Well, there's going to be a new head. I don't know if it's going to be Keith Ellison or anybody else, but that's great. Yeah, well, you might as well sit and, give all the bald people you know a comb for Christmas.
You're really losing it. I love it.
Honestly. Yeah.
No, I grant it. You're right.
That's great. Keith Ellison's going to be head of the DNC. That's great. He's going to be the one to be able to announce how upset we are that there's no more Medicare. Get rid of superdelegates. If they worked, they would have prevented the Clinton nomination. Well, there was a plan to diminish the number of them, but now you're saying that the superdelegates should have had more. I don't know what that is. Get money out of politics. Clinton outspent Trump but still lost.
I'll totally get money out of politics. Agenda numero uno. Hold on one second. Before we get to that, I have a call with the Prime Minister of Malaysia because there's some construction on some of my hotels have been delayed.
Here's the funniest part. Most of all, let democracy take its course.
That sounds like a great idea. Definitely let me just, get my feet wet. See how I do.
Turns out that the course that a democracy takes in this instance, when people like you are the voters, is it starts to sort of just degrade, go down into a kleptocracy, and then blah, 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 blah. I like some of the moves the DNC is making. I see that EW and BS have bigger voices.
He's literally like a bad sports radio caller. Like, it's a guy calling in with like the same dispassion of like, I think they should change the starting lineup up, and he doesn't even know about the team to begin with.
If Clinton would have won, it would have been the establishment Democrats running the show. Trump winning is a tough pill to swallow, but it's medicine that's very much needed for the DNC to get back in the game.
It's like this hotel in Pakistan needed to be suicide bombed in order to get back in the game.
This guy thinks that the election is the ends. That it's literally like winning the Super Bowl. And now that they lost the Super Bowl, back to the drawing board, guys. We'll do it all again next year. No, that's not the way it works. If they don't, progressives will continue to look for third parties. Well, first off, I got news for you. If you think there's going to be a single vote for Jill Stein in 2020, you're insane. They very well may, the Democrats. Andrew Cuomo. And Jill Stein won't get a single damn vote. I mean, it's a little bit of hyperbole.
Jill Stein's going to win in 2020.
Or
man.
Whoever it is. I've been down this road before. My response to him was quite lengthy. But I said, basically, the question, what's our plan now? Plan is try and defend every gain that's been made in civil rights, workers' rights, education rights, health and housing rights in the last 100 years. To do so with no branch of government, no leverage, no power. Basically, hope and watch as everything you think is important to you when you think of a society gets torn apart. That should take us through next fall. Pretty much. And then my plan is to make sure that we as a society, if we're lucky enough to get back to this place in 30 or 40 years, assuming climate change hasn't totally wrecked civilization,
which is the biggest
to make sure that there are fewer people so blind to their privilege, their narcissism, stupidity, or whatever drove you to make your choice, to be so oblivious to its consequences. That's my plan. Unbelievable. It's a bitter pill to swallow. Is it really?
Do, do, do.
Exactly.
All right.
Now, I've noticed I'm getting less emails like that one and less tweets. And I think by the time, you know, we're into the second week of the Trump administration, I won't be getting any of those.
You think that will de-dum-dumify?
I think that those people realize, but this guy is emailing me. I don't know what. To unburden, I didn't ask. At this point, I don't care why you didn't. That's for you to deal with. That's for you to live with. You know, right now, let me tell you why I blew up the dam. Okay? Because it was preventing and I can't be sure about this, but I'm pretty sure what it was doing is it was preventing these swallows that I saw that lived near my house from flying up and getting to a place where they wanted to nest. And this guy's explaining it to all the people who are filling sandbags to keep the village from being completely washed away.
All I can tell you is that emailer's political acuity is terrifying, and I hope that they do not act on his recommendations or Jill Stein will defeat us in 2020. Psych.
Unbelievable.
Look forward to human organ exchanges.
But Bernie's on the Sunday talking shows.
Yeah, you know the one person who I think it would actually have preferred to not be if it meant that all of this calamity wasn't happening? Bernie.
Look, what do you think? Do you think Bernie would be like, well, I would be on maybe one-third the amount of Sunday talking shows, but I would be chairman of the banking committee.
Well, fuck that. More time with George Stephanopoulos for me. I'm voting for Donald Trump. It's a great, brilliant plan. I never saw it that way before. Twice the bookings. I'll get to talk to Chris Matthews more. That's fun for everyone.
And again, look, I have been very explicit in saying that there are plenty of but-fors, but the one thing that Clinton could have controlled was the way they ran their campaign. And I know numerically Jill Stein impacted the outcome. And people not voting at all. If you add, you know, this guy, I don't know if he voted for Jill Stein or he just didn't vote for president or what. I understand it's the failure of the campaign. But don't come to me with your stupid rationalizations. You people are basically coming and saying, we're chum. And I have no interest in having a conversation with chum. Yeah, it's definitely up to the Clinton people. Campaign. They blew it. They didn't get people out, but those people they didn't get out, they don't know who I am. They don't have my email address and they don't have my Twitter feed, the people who didn't come out. Anybody who's contacting me with an argument as to why they didn't vote, that's on you. That's not on the campaign because you knew better. You had access to more information. You're more engaged. You didn't vote because of a psychological issue you have. Honestly. Again, not blaming the loss on you. It's like I'm not blaming Clinton's loss on Trump voters either. I still think that they're morons. Let's just say 80% of them. I think there are some. How is it that Trump phrased it? I'm sure some of them are good people.
Yeah. I'm sure some of my voters are good people.
No, when he said how he opened up his...
I remember that. That's what he said about Mexicans.
Yeah. I'm sure some of them are good people.
Some of them do a great job.
Some of them do a great job. All right, we're going to head to the fun half. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. You can IM me. Don't forget, it is your membership that makes this program possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. We're building a new website, folks. It's happening. No more Googling majority.fm and getting, this site might be hacked.
Which is super ironic because the site's going to get hacked.
All right, we'll be right back after this.